Welcome back to Linux Weekly Daily Wednesdays, where we can sit back, relax, take that midweek break, talk about some of the things going on in the world of Linux and open source. I'm Vin Stone. That is Jill Bryant. And over there is Pedro Mateus. And everyone at home joining us live. I was going to de-zoom you, Jill, but you're just going to be big.
It's okay.
It's going to be, wait, how long is the cord on that microphone? You can go sit on the back of the room.
Like, ah. Oh, boy.
What's going on, beautiful people? Tis the holidays. Hopefully you were, well, if you're stuck at work, a lot of us, I'm like, well, what's the difference? And I'm like, yeah, fair point. I'm still at home. Now I have nothing to do. This is horrible. Go watch The Mandalorian. But
yeah.
Let's see what's up with everyone, because I had to end a relationship, a very long-term relationship.
Aww.
Like, I had to break up with Thunderbird.
What? Oh, poor Thunderbird.
I did. I had to end it, man. You know, we've been on the rocks a little bit, Pedro. Just a little bit. You know, we were working through it, man. We're going to counseling, you know, and everything's aligned. What happened is Debian pushed out, you know, a point, a little point, really, like 10.7. And I finally was exposed to all of the glory that is, I think, Thunderbird 70. Oh, no. No. First things first is, you know, this is the new one where, like, the default theme is white on light blue, which... I don't know how that got past QA, because I can't, I was willing to get over there. But okay, real quick, something you still have to do in at towards the end of 2020 is for high DPI displays, which you still do, even though I have a UHD 43-inch monitor. You have to go into settings and you have to go to the advanced thing and you have to change the that 1 to 2, like in the advanced config, that one screen for scaling, which I did. And I'm like, okay. That's fine. Now all the folders are cut off. Like, it looks like a hot mess for navigation on the left side. It's like, how do I do that? Oh, it's such a known problem. Someone has written an extension for it and it's in the store. Oh. Okay. Install that. Then it got to where I had to keep it around 1080 size on this monitor because I don't need a full screen, and it was basically full screen like that. And between that and it just being sluggish to start up, even more so than the previous versions, had to let it go. Aww. Taking almost 3 seconds to start up to, and I'm like, nay. So I just switched everything over to Evolution, and Evolution opens, and I am like the same speed as everything else on this thread ripping system. As soon as you let go of the mouse, and boom, look, everything's there, and I'm done with it. Yeah, so that's it. Go. I went around and looked in the store, man. Nobody's making extensions or themes for the new version of Thunderbird. If there was like a better, I could have lived with it, but the visual stuff, like the dark mode, and I didn't like that, and I didn't like the pastel blue on white. Like, visually, I couldn't. The bandwidth, it messed up, like, because I need to be able to pop that open, check 4 or 5 email accounts super quick just by snapshotting it, and like the way it rolled. Evolution, it works. It does everything I expect in an email client. I got emails that it. I don't expect much, but yeah, that was my biggest change. That's how boring of an existence I currently have, Pedro Mateus. Did you do anything slightly more exciting than that?
Yes, he did.
I got a bit more time to play with the Pie Boy DMG. Yes, it's here. If you don't watch the Saturday show, Pedro. It actually arrived Friday. I think it was Friday. It's here. It works. It works really well. The screen is teeny tiny. It's only 640 by 480.
What did you... Do they make one like something a little bigger, like, I don't know, 17, 18 inches? Ultra wide.
I don't think they do. At least I haven't seen one for sale. They do make one that is basically the same size, but it's all screen. So it's and just as thick.
I know I really want. But... Get some tape. I got an idea.
But yeah, no, with a resolution this small, even PSP games, like demanding ones, run really, really well. I haven't tried Dolphin yet. Some people have been saying that they've been able to play some GameCube stuff, so I still need to try that. N64 works, but I haven't tried a GameCube, so
I would genuinely be curious about that, because Dolphin is like crazy CPU dependent.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. That's right.
What about you, Joe? Anything new?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm still...
Speaking of pies, right?
Yeah, speaking of pies, I've been really having a lot of fun with my Raspberry Pi 400. Yay!
Have you plugged it in yet, or you just been taking it around town showing its scenes, and you're like, hey, man,
look at what I have.
Just partying with it, you know. I've been having a lot of fun with Pi without drinking and...
No. So I've tried different distros on it, the latest Ubuntu Mate for Raspberry Pi, and of course Raspbian OS, and have had fun playing games on it. I did the show notes, today's show notes on it, and I've been really impressed by it. It's the fastest Pi I own, and of course it's the fastest Pi they make. So that is really cool. And I'm just loving it. My only complaint is the mouse is a little short.
Yeah, a lot of people seem to be complaining that the cord on the mouse is teeny tiny.
But I have an extension that I use.
Man, who made the leads on that? Nintendo?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. That's a good little bit of ketchup. No mustard and other condiments were harmed during the making of that intro. But we got to talk about a thing, Pedro. And before we get started, because check this out, we know we're going to get stuff wrong. We know. Yeah. And we have such a beautiful track record of getting stuff wrong.
What are you talking about? At least two per episode.
Yeah, right. And those are just the ones we planned.
Yes.
Next week, we're going to have somebody from Red Hat come chat with us and be like, you got that wrong, that wrong, awesome. And that wrong. So stay tuned for that. But until then, ooh. Let's misrepresent things, Pedro.
Yeah, so this was literally everywhere Tuesday and then today.
What was?
Because CentOS put out a blog post to say, the future of CentOS project is CentOS Stream. And a lot of people went,
oh my, they left comments open.
Yeah. And it's like, oh yeah, CentOS Stream is basically a slightly different way of building. It's much more geared. It's much more streamlined. It doesn't have like the full desktop. It doesn't have everything. It's basically just a base for running your containers, for running your instances, for running whatever it happens to be. And the biggest thing that people seem to be having an issue with is that they're effectively killing off CentOS 8 instead of being supported up until 2029. It's only being supported until the end of 2021. Mm-hmm. And with that goes everyone that did a migration from CentOS 7 recently to CentOS 8. And it is going to be something like package updateness wise. It's going to be somewhere in between what Cent used to be, or RHEL, and Fedora. It's going to sort of track the testing unstable part of Red Hat, which people aren't terribly big fans of, because CentOS tends to be used in a more productive environment. Now, as a user, I absolutely get the having more up-to-date packages and being fitting in somewhere between old and stable like RHEL and new and possibly breaking stuff like Fedora. Having something in between, it's very nice. As a user, I can see that. For businesses, that's going to be a hard sell.
Yeah, so I was reading in the comments around the internet that this would lead to businesses migrating to Ubuntu and maybe OpenSUSE instead. And I definitely understand that. They basically are changing the whole OS to, you know, rolling release. So
what you gotta do is you gotta take a trip back, kids. You gotta remember, I grew up with Red Hat. You know, I was running Red Hat until Red Hat was done with me. And they're like, it's not Red Hat anymore. I'm like, what mean by that, Red Hat? Like, it's Fedora now. The internet. Yes, there was internet back then. We all lost our collective minds. Like, oh no, this is doom. What are you talking about? And then you install Fedora Core 1. That used to be the name. And everything was right in the world, man. But there was a lot of internet. Initial blowback, things changed. That it's like, okay, look, hey, now we have Fedora. Fedora is like boringly stable these days.
Yeah.
It's like, what? It just installs now? Okay. It, unless you tried to install it like right when the 2060 came out, it wasn't having any of that. I had to like, yeah, it was a long story. But I do think this is going to put some companies that didn't plan ahead into a little bit of a tight spot, because like 6 years ago, I think it was Red Hat and Cint, and they got together and I'm like, maybe some things could possibly change down the road. Maybe we need a plan B. But Greg, one of the CentOS project founders, it looks like he was planning to do a fork or is planning to do a fork. So there is that. Mm. But yeah, they want to like Cint to sit somewhere between RHEL and Fedora, kind of like a rolling release. So when I hear rolling release, I would not have a rolling release in the studio. Like, no. I use Debian Stale for that reason. I'm like, okay, you come out every 2 years and you're supported for 5 years. No moving targets. I like that. I even tried when I was fighting with Blackmagic. I'm like, I set Cint up on this box partially just because I wanted to see if I could still tango with a beast. I'm like, oh, man, people need to be quiet. This is easy. But I could see if you hadn't set up any planning, a lot of times you end up using an enterprise stuff. You'll end up using Cint or RHEL because that's where the drivers be. You know, I run into that with like Mellanox equipment, run into that Blackmagic stuff. That's just where your official support is. Because if you call up support and they're like, oh, you're not running Cint? Hi, Blackmagic. Talking directly to you right now. Yeah. Oh, no. We understand you paid money. Bye. I don't know, man. I mean, you might see some people moving over to the Ubuntu's or the Debian's or I don't know. We'll know more next week, because we'll be able to talk and get some better
information. I love the hate site. They made a hate site.
Oh, hate site? Hang on. Where is the...
CentOS.rip.
Yeah, CentOS.rip. It's actually genuinely well done, and you can tell that the person who made it was deeply invested in the CentOS thing.
Purchase RHEL twice.
Yeah.
That's
the RHEL project.
You know what? This is well done enough to where like, okay, that's kind of funny. I mean, you got to be able to take something like that and be like, all right, not bad.
Yeah, and if I do suggest that if you are listening to the show or you're watching us on YouTube, go and check out the show notes and read the comments on that article, please.
Good times. So something we've been talking about is every time System 76 has a new release, new hardware, a new finely wood grain piece of mechanical wonder stuff with like hard drill. Anyway, where's the AMD option on the laptops? I know Pedro, both of us have been like, where's that? Well, that's right, here man. Write it in red. AMD's running Bulldozer CPU. Wait, no. But for some reason, they decided to put a GIF of a bull, which made me think, what? That's probably not something you really want some people to think about. As somebody who owned Bulldozer CPU and ran these shows for a long time, that's not something. It currently heats an apartment in Canada right now. Not making that up. That's exactly what that CPU is doing. But Pangolin, staging. They got a new system tech specs, and these are going to be rolling out. So what are we talking about this? Again, Bulldozer thing, get over that. We're going to be able to get a AMD 4700 or 4500U up to 64 gigabytes of RAM, and it's going to weigh in at 1.65 kilos, or that's 3.64 freedom units, starting at 849. And I'm guessing, I'm going to be too far off, probably about $1,000 for one you'd actually want to use.
Probably. Yeah. Otherwise, that 849 is just going to be for the 8 gigabyte with the Ryzen 5 4500U with the smallest possible SSD.
Oh, man. Jill, do you want one? Yeah. Are you going to buy one? Come on there.
I think it's going to be a beautiful laptop, and I would like one if it had an Ultra HD screen or at least a 1440p option, because that's a higher quality stream for doing art and playing games. So
15.6 inch 1080p.
It is one of the middle sized laptops, I suppose I should say, because there are 17 inch and 21 inch laptops now. So yeah. But I guess starting at 850 is System 76's equivalent of a reasonably priced option. I would like to see, you know, something a bit lower, because not everyone can afford that right now.
Get a Chromebook.
They don't make them in Ryzen yet.
Yeah. No, yet.
Yeah, we all saw the rumors on the internet, and like, AMD's working on their own Mac style. I don't think anyone's...
ARM thingy.
Yeah, it's like, let's revive the K-12. That'll be interesting.
They do make a module, the V2000. Mm-hmm. That one's it's looking pretty nice. It could be interesting.
But hey, man, it's AMD 76. Yeah. I'm happy to see that. I think 849 is reasonable. System 76 is not the business of making like the bottom bargain basement stuff that barely. No. Yeah, you get one of these, you get the good support that goes with it. You know, if you have any problems with it, it should be taken care of. I think that's reasonable. I mean, it's it could be System 76. Still cheaper than a Mac.
Oh, yes.
Yes. On all sides, yeah.
Easily. So that's some good news from a Linux vendor, but we do have some bad news from, this comes from Omg, Ubuntu. All this is going to be in our show notes. Go check it out. Za Reason, Linux PC seller, is being forced to close, which is sad because, man, you got to check this out. They've been around since like 2008. Mm-hmm. I'm sad to see them go, man. These things do happen. But they basically rolled on like, hey, pandemic was the last little blow. We were kind of teetering along, and this just took us out. Look at the little bizarre reason. Aw.
Aw, beautiful cases.
Again, think about this. The big downside with this is something that they had to say, which good on them for saying it, like flat out. Like all of your warranties are null and void, unfortunately. Yeah. So that is like the big, big downside. On the upside, collector item.
Very true. I have an older dual core laptop of theirs that's still running beautifully. Mm. And, you know, this is a family owned business, which is, and you know, they were one of the very first vendors to sell computers with Linux pre-installed. So this was very depressing to me. Because not only do I know the family, and for many years they had a booth at the Southern California Linux Expo, and they actually helped start Scale. And, their children were friends and members of the Linux Chicks LA, and the parents were friends of ours, and they used to donate hardware and Tex plushies, like that big one right there is from Za Reason. They gave those to us as gifts and for our fundraising raffles at our booth. So I owe so much to them and all the Linux chicks. We all have their computers. So I was just very down about this. And yeah, I almost cried, actually, because these are friends. So,
and they used to be the budget option for US peeps, because otherwise you have System 76 and Intralware and Tuxedo. I think Intralware ships to the US. I don't know if Tuxedo does, maybe. But yeah, right now, there really isn't a lower price option for Linux pre-installed PCs in the US. That's sad.
Well, good news, everyone. You probably don't want to go out and buy a new AMD card if you're running DaVinci. I've been waiting for this to show up. Quick mention, because here's the thing, Pedro. I've been I had, because of you, I had to legitimately look at the new AMD GPUs. It's all Pedro's fault.
Okay.
100%.
Because I'm going to buy the 3060 Ti when it's available.
Exactly. Okay. Which means, like, there we go. This is the perfect card for this system because it's all I need. And Pedro's like, I'm buying that one. So now I have to entertain the idea of getting a 3070. Okay.
Yeah. So, I was planning on a 3070 as well.
Once I'm in that price bracket, might as well explore the AMD options. And hey, 16 gigs of memory on the new AMD cards. I'm like, okay, nice. Let's go see what they can do. And Puget Systems, they typically do this. And this is a reasonably safe bet from their past benchmarks, you know, because it doesn't matter whether you on PC, Mac, Linux, scores roughly the same because they're all compute heavy. And hoof, we gotta go down. So, this is pretty much how it rolls all the way down. Up at real simply, you know, this is extended overall score, 3090, crushing everything, including the Titan. Man, 2080 Ti is still doing good. 6800 XT, way down, about halfway. Then, which, you know, 6800 XT is faster than 2070 Super. But the RX 6800 16 gig is slower than a 2060 Super.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. And this trend just continues, man. You know, 57 at the bottom. Vega 64 is faster than, which I guess kind of maybe should be considering the price. And it's dominated. Dominated by CUDA.
Because the new architecture.
Here's the thing. I know you're in the garage. Made me sad because it's like I can't even consider that, man. No, I mean, it'd be neat. I'd rather use OpenCL if it was a option. And yes, a working option has to be comparable to the alternative. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't cut your nose off to spite your face. I know some people are very, very keen on doing that just so they can take some moral high ground, but. Yeah,
sticking to one's principles has, there's something to be said about that, but the Vega 64 on a couple of the tests is faster than the 6800 XT.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's bad. Whatever you did, go back, fix it, because that's bad.
I would like to think, in a very reasonable way, AMD, when they released these new cards, and they just released new ones, the 6900.
The 6900. The 6900 and it has really,
supposed to be
really
the big
good.
One.
These are focused for gaming performance, not
exactly
workstation performance. Maybe we'll have a whole new round of overpriced WX series. So
probably, yeah.
That'd be interesting to see. Pedro, you do love your dot files, your dot folders. You are the, you're the dot man. You're full of dots. It's like connect the dots. That's what I think about.
Actually don't mind dot files and dot folders because I usually keep those hidden. The thing that I mind are stupid all lowercase folders like snap. That's what annoys me a lot, but I get that a lot of people do keep those dot files visible and they like to have everything neat in much the same way that I do, but they don't want just random games or random applications just creating an entirely new dot folder in their home directory. Well, AntiDot is here very much to try and fix that. It tries to move everything to the appropriate locations, and then we'll create symlinks, we'll create like environment variables to try and work around the fact that it just completely migrated a directory out of where the application or game happens to be looking for it, which is good.
My old That's nemesis, very good. Docker.
Yeah. So they actually have the example there of Docker. So that you can actually, if you don't like having all of those dot folders visible, well, you can do Control H.
All right.
Yeah. So, you know, I was actually really happy that the antidote clean command will actually prompt you if you want to apply the rule, like a good Linux app does. But I was happy it did that because it actually made me a little nervous running it. So I actually ran it on one of my other machines, and it did a really good job. It moved the dot file. They don't actually, you know, for me, they don't really bother me, but it is nice mm-hmm. that they move it to a more organized, in a more organized way. So.
Well, I like the idea, man. I mean, more appropriate locations, you know, based on the XDG directory specs, but just close your eyes. You don't see.
You can keep your eyes open. Just, you know, do Control H. It'll hide the dot files.
I like to be able to. I like to know who's there, but I also like them to be in logical locations too. Because we've all been on that journey, that search of like, mm-hmm. really, where's that this thing true. At? Where did you say? Where's your config file?
Yeah, it's usually dot config, the root of the home folder,
local,
or share. Dot local.
Yeah. I'm like, really? Okay, fine.
You're there. Summon Etsy. Yeah.
What do we have? Oh, and Fission ZHS support in the works. Mm-hmm. Also, missed opportunity. I'm sure the program would run possibly 7 to 10% faster if you just renamed it to Anti-Doot.
Anti-Doot or
Boop. Doot. Mm-hmm.
Anti-Doot.
That might definitely, don't ask, it's magic how that'll work, but they'll probably speed it up a little bit. Joe, you were excited about G-Music.
G-Music browser is back from the dead after 5 years. It's actually one of my favorite music player programs, and I'm so happy to see it back. And it even has two ports, an updated GTK2 client, and they also have a beta GTK3 client. And what's unique about this player is it has so much detail for the artist info, lyrics, and album covers. And it's just
that
nicely
does look
presented.
Like something from 8 years ago.
It does.
It is kind of classic looking, yes.
It is.
But it's very customizable, has a really customizable interface that you can completely customize, or it has some predefined layouts like iTunes mode. And I was happy to hear that this was back, because that was my go-to for a long time to play all my MP3 and OGG files. Hmm. And now it supports .opus file format. So that is cool.
Nice. Yeah, that looks like someone tried to recreate Amarok in GTK, and that was the final result.
So it's like being able to run Amarok without like 2 gigs of depths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll have to download the GTK framework anyway, so.
Well, if you didn't have QT, I mean, TK?
Yeah. If you're already running KDE or LXQT or something like that, you already have those depths.
However, you know, this is why I love app images. And also, there you go. There's your snap argument. There's your Flatpak argument. KDN Live. I use Gideon Live, but I don't want the kitchen sink attached to it. Okay, all right. Boop, done. Yeah, I like that. But I don't have a lot of local music. And by a lot, I mean the Zathnas and Frankennas, both powered down. And that was the only boxes in this house that had any type of like MP3s. And I know some people still like to carry them around with them, because I will have those conversations. I'm like, why did you get 128 gig mobile? It's like, for the music. If your cellular connection goes down, you're going to have, I think you're going to have problems that your music collection is not going to be able to solve, man.
But I get, you know, keeping a local copy of your music library, because I like to buy game soundtracks, and then I download them and I put them on the NAS so that I can listen to them while I'm around the house.
Yeah. And I was a DJ for 16 years, so I have literally probably several terabytes of data just in music files, because I would back up all my rare discs, whether they be CD or vinyl, onto hard drive.
Yeah, I'm living in 2020. All that's in the cloud. This is kind of interesting. Shut Sentry?
Yeah, yep. Interesting name. It kind of reminds me of a portal turret, right? Shut Sentry. It's
shutting down.
Yes, exactly, Pedro. So Shut Sentry is a virtual dead man switch that it protects your computer from unauthorized physical access, like if you were to put in a USB drive. And it runs and shows you an on-screen prompt with at regular time intervals. And if the correct password is not entered, the system is locked.
There's something about the phrase failure options I enjoy. Like, here are your options for failure.
And we both know you'll never amount to anything, so here's some options.
That's the GUI. Yes, that's the GUI Windows version. The Linux version is an easy to run shell script and is an easy to use CLI program. There it is.
You know what? You get a bonus soda for having a, that's more than so many GitLab and GitHub like GUI projects. Yeah. Hey man, you took a picture of the terminal. Good on you. I have some idea.
Yeah, it's really nicely laid out.
Of what I'm walking into. Pedro, you seem to have an issue with it though.
I do, because I was reading through it and like the screenshot that they have of the Windows version, and it's like, okay, so you can run this every fixed amount of time, or you can do it when someone attaches a USB device, or you can do it when one of your Bluetooth devices gets disconnected. Basically, if you've ever, you know, attached a Bluetooth game controller, or you've been playing a game and something just goes out of the system, even your wireless mouse. Yeah, don't put this in your gaming machine, because you will be challenged and you will have to fumble to put things down. Correct. And grab things. Correct. And shut down.
You nailed it. Don't install this on your gaming machine. Nay.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's a stupid idea. Install it on a soon-to-be former friend's gaming machine.
There you go. Good idea.
Sit back, relax, and just watch that take place.
I can imagine anyone who's not expecting this, and every, say, 30 minutes, they get a little prompt to, like, type in the password, or we're going to shut you down. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
That probably has use for someone. I just wanted to give it a mention. I run across these smaller projects. I'm like, hey, man, that's neat. Like this one, Artline.
Yes. Artline, it looks fairly interesting because it is just a PyTorch project that you
deep
can...
Deep learning.
Yep. It is deep learning, and you point it at a picture and it does the usual. It tries to grab like all the detail and makes it as though it were hand-drawn, which is... Yeah, there's Rami Malek playing...
Mr. Robot.
Freddie Mercury.
That's all that episode.
Yeah. And it is exactly just pointed at a picture, and it does like someone had drawn the picture rather than it being just a photograph, and it looks very good. It actually does a very good job, and so I was like, okay, do I have to actually set up a development environment to get this going? But no, they had they have a Google Colab. There'll be a link in the show notes. So I went there and I just pointed it at one of my pictures that I have on Imgur, and okay, go ahead. It failed. So
yeah.
That was disappointing.
It failed for me. Yeah, it failed for me too. I was on our Linux
using FastAI and PyTorch. PyTorch. Have you got to play with PyTorch? It's so much better. blink noises. There's some issues with like backgrounds and lighting and stuff like that. Some of the models confuse be like with hair and shadow, but it's being worked on. I thought this
you
need
work
a high resolution images naturally, but go play with it. I wanted to do some A/B comparisons because it's interesting to see something like this actually look at the image and try to make a good one, because you're like, but sketch filters, sometimes you can
they're bad. Yeah. Most of them.
I don't know. Maybe I can come up with like some horror soup by making some sketch art with us. Maybe.
You mean the logos?
No. I want to make your face into wallpaper.
Oh, okay.
Uh-oh.
But I also would like to upload it to this computer. Yeah.
No, my ego is absolutely okay with people having me as their wallpaper.
I didn't say what it was going to wallpaper, but okay. Last one of the year, this is going to be the last one that we cover, is open source predictions for 2021. And Jill?
Yeah.
Is there anything in here that's predictable?
Yeah, actually, I think Jack Wallen, who wrote the post, I think he's right as usual. He does these almost every year. And he was saying that we will see the continued adoption of open source in the business sector, yay, as well as an increase of Linux on the desktop. And maybe on the desktop only about 10%, but that's still huge coming from 2.2% where it has been. And yeah, so the open source being adopted in business, he sees a lot of that is being sparked also by the pandemic. And yes. I see that. Yeah, very, very, very true, because people, businesses are looking for cheap and especially free options, all open source. And he talked about also Kubernetes being simplified, like it'll be easier point and click on a web page to implement Kubernetes with Docker images. And what the one I thought was really interesting, and I think he's actually right on, is SUSE. He predicts them being at the head of big data in the coming year, because deployment and simplicity with their SUSE manager tool makes the AI environments really, really easy to manage.
I'll walk in and go, mm-hmm. No one's touching SUSE right now, simply because who's going to buy him next?
Yes.
Well, it is. Yeah, there is that, but they are growing huge. And
businesses operate on certainties. SUSE is not a certain company, unfortunately. Looking at that, man, I got to say, this is definitely our year, the Linux desktop article for 2020. To the point, though, business options over this year, we've had some good news, you know, from Lenovo, HP, and Dell just rolling out their Linux options and solutions, and that's kind of brilliant. We're happy to see that. And doesn't mean you can get one. I mean, but it just means it's an option to ask your employer, ask Jordan, hey, can I get a Linux? No. Okay.
You could have a Mac.
Yeah. Right. Go. You end up getting a Mac, man. But so if we're going to do the like end of the year, like, mm-hmm. hey, man, you're the Linux desktop. Can we also do the desktop is dead thing too? I want to do that.
Yeah.
RIP
his
desktop.
Final point.
Yeah.
His final point is literally is like Linux on the home desktop will start to gain serious traction. Really? You had to end the article with, oh, 2021 is the year of the Linux desktop. Really?
Well, really? It's because of, you know, AI and cloud services. And a lot of the companies like Lenovo and you know, System 76 and Dell are coming out with laptops with Linux on them, Linux desktop. So that's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
Well, Canonical said it has grown huge in the
desktop.
Well,
if I was in the business of selling stuff, I would say it's grown too.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we're doing so well. Please buy more from us.
Here's the thing. At the end of the day, everybody's in it, but the desktop usage, something I absolutely track is... so many people live in absolute bubbles. You need to get outside of like your friend's sphere and go over to your friend's house that's not into IT, it's not a nerd, and like that. They don't have a desktop computer in their house. Like, what? Oh, I got an HP from like 10 years ago. What are you talking about? What are you, Kate? Man, I got my mobile right here. That's what I use. Now, I'm going to say, if you're going to be seeing Linux adoption in businesses and any widespread, COVID kind of threw a monkey wrench in that, because I'm seeing a lot of people coming back into offices. Despite what corporate real estate would like to happen, I don't think that's ever going to be a thing again, because we've kind of demonstrated, like, on a shoestring budget, like 20 seconds to pull it off. I'm like, oh, we could do this. Mm-hmm. That got accelerated. But you might see Linux in the form of thin clients. Because I can definitely see a future where you're streaming your Microsoft operating system from your Linux thin client, because Microsoft's like, hey, here's your desktop. We can stream that, because if we can stream video games, you know what's a lot easier than streaming video games? Your desktop.
Streaming a static image that's just a desktop wallpaper with some icons on it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can run that off of a Raspberry Pi. So,
I don't know, man. There's streaming. I do honestly believe there's going, like, that just makes too much logical sense as streaming mm-hmm. desktops in the future, because you're already seeing that in industries like animation, 3D modeling, stuff like that. People stuck at home. That's how they're accessing the programs. People I've talked to working. And I'm like, yeah, all right. They've got their own setup. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. I can see that rolling out to the desktop. But, and you know, Microsoft, man, you know, Microsoft wants to sell you a subscription. I'm like, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. You want to buy a little Microsoft?
I'm waiting for Windows 10S to see what kind of a special Microsoftness they pull with that one.
Just $9.99 a month, and you can have all the Windows you can eat. Delicious Windows, Pedro. Think about it.
Yeah.
It'd be like a Netflix subscription. Yeah, as long as you pay it.
I can imagine the kind of hell that would introduce to create entirely new support teams or train the current support teams that support regular desktop Windows to support Windows 10S.
All right. Well, it's good times for Linux, no matter what. No matter what anybody says. Yes. So that's good.
Exactly.
That's kind of brilliant. We're going to get into a slice of pie, but a little bit of shameless self-promotion. If you want to help out the show and get some cool swag, I just use the word swag unironically. Deal with it.
Yes.
store.linuxemcast.com. We got some shirts just in mm-hmm. time. I think if you order them right now, you'll get them in time for the holidays.
Yep. Yeah, just barely.
Long sleeve, cups, stickers. We got a mask.
Mask.
Die cuts, all the fun stuff, and we get a little cut of that, and helps out the show, all that fun stuff. Yeah. We also have a Patreon.
LWW shirt.
All of our beautiful patrons, they make this show possible. patreon.com/LinuxTeamcast. See, that's a lot better than this show is brought to you by Bubba Keg. It's
good.
The most Bubby-y, keggy. It's a 52, which leads me to believe that there's a superior model available.
Aw, I'm happy to see that Exalti is getting his LWW shirt December 22nd.
Oh, yay. Very nice, very nice.
Yay.
That's awesome. And confuse friends and family this holiday season.
Yeah.
Linux Gamecast apparel. Okay. Let's get into it. Happy Pi Day. That's right. Boop. There it is. See you next.
That seems like a waste of a very good mold for not a whole lot of pie. But, you know, to that point, you have the NanoPi. It's not a Raspberry Pi. It is very much using the ROC chip RK3399. Which is the same one that Pine uses for everything. And it is not, as they say in the article, it's not the most efficient when it comes to like power usage and heat, because it does get a little bit toasty.
A little bit.
And they have, they have a little graph there. And to the NanoPi R4S's credit, the optional little aluminium case that it comes with does a very good job of sinking that heat away from the components that do get the hottest. And you have multiple configurations, obviously. You start at 1 gig of RAM and you can go all the way up to 4. Where have I seen that before? Oh, that's right. I have a Pinebook Pro. It's right over there.
You wouldn't know it.
There you go.
I went to look to see if I could reach it, but no, I can't.
No. It's for the best, Pedro.
At least I can see where it is this time instead of having to rummage through the drawers for like 2 minutes. The big selling point here is the fact that it may not have Wi-Fi, but it does have 2 gigabit Ethernet ports and 2 USB 3.0 ports, which is very nice because you can actually install OpenWRT on it, and look, now it's an access point, or it's a teeny tiny little router.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess. What's it going to cost me, Pedro? How many thousands of dollars?
The base version starts at $45. Okay. If you want the 4 gigabyte version, it's $55.
Does it come with a spoiler?
No.
Useless.
If you want the spoiler case, it's an extra $14, which means if you bought the 4 gigabyte version with the metal case, it would be $69. There, I'm done with that joke.
Okay. Yes. All I heard was no spoiler. That's a thing if you want to go play with it, Rock Chip. But we got some interesting. I almost said good news, and my brain just like came out and dropped an elbow on me. I'm like, new version of Raspberry Pi OS released. There is some good stuff in here. There most definitely is. First and foremost, welcome to the brave new world. A Pulse Audio, kids. Yeah, have fun with that. They believe Pulse Audio has reached a point just when we're getting ready to get rid of Pulse Audio and replace it with Pipewire. Yes.
It's stable now.
They're like, hey, man, it and this is their exact wording. It's reached a point where it solves more problems than it creates. That is the most glowing thing they could come up with. This is how they're defending their point of like, this is why we're not using just straight up Pulse anymore, because this okay, yeah, you get it. Kind of interesting to see, but they've also added a Chromium with hardware acceleration, so WebRTC.
Yay, Steam, finally.
Yeah, Jitsi, all that fun stuff.
Yay.
That I'm really happy to see. And no more Flash support. Oh, no, it's both of you. There's a little talking about Pulse Audio, and then they go through a lot of defense. Like, this is why we did it. I get it. Theoretically, this they've is done why some we plumbing. Do it. For Bluetooth and all the other fun stuff, sure, and work a little better. And they've got like a little device profile thing they've added, and they've thought it through. This wasn't just lazily done by any means whatsoever. Printing, though, check this out. Cups and System Config Printer are now installed as part of the Raspberry Pi OS for both of you with printers plugged in to your Raspberry Pi. You'll never escape.
I guess you could use a Pi as a print server, so yeah, it would make sense to be able to talk to them over the network.
You know what, Pedro? I'm going to say I'm against it because I'm not having a print server that I could lose.
I mean, physically, you could lose it from your desk to, you know, screwing it on whatever wall it happens to be.
I'm thinking in a business environment. I'm thinking like Vin would think when he's in that business environment, like, I bet I could hide that.
In the lip of the cab. Like,
oh, man. What do you think, Jill?
Yeah. So one of the cool things is that for my Raspberry Pi 400, they're actually going to have an option now for the power LED to also do hard drive on and off. So that'll be cool too. But what I was really impressed with this release is there are really wonderful new updates for us that are visually challenged. And so now to use Orca, you just hold down Control, Alt, and Spacebar to automatically install Orca. And then a dialog prompt will appear, and Orca will actually tell you that it's installed and when it has it finished. So they're making great strides.
That's very good.
Yeah.
To just wonderful. Have that out of the box. And
out of the box.
Someone who's visually impaired just pulls it out of the box, goes Control Alt Space, and it starts reading it out loud. We're installing text-to-speech support. We're installing the screen reader.
That's also something I would like to see printed on a piece of paper on top of it.
Oh.
Sort of defeat the purpose.
Yeah. Well, in big, big fonts, Pedro, so you didn't have to use something else to find out about the feature.
Yes.
Yes. Maybe you want to tell us about your features. Maybe you have a Pi, new hot Pi-ness, and you want to do some cool stuff with it, or you've done some cool stuff with it, or just thoughts, hints, allegations. You got some questions to ask, some things to tell us. How can they do that, one Pedro Mateus?
There are many ways you can do that. The safest way is probably to send a text message.
You can
to,
be like that dude on YouTube.
Let's not start giving out phone numbers at this point. But yes, if you would like to write us a text message, you can do so by going to linuxgamecast.com and hitting the contact button. LWDW is a show that you need to pick if you'd like to send some feedback. Otherwise, we may be inclined to misinterpret that as some hate mail, and then you may have some naughty words leveraged at you on that Saturday show, What We Do. No such thing will happen here, although you may get a little bit of sarcasm.
Yes, it will, Pedro, because you've already caused me one edit.
What did I say?
Oh, you dropped the H-bomb.
Heck, really?
Yeah, it's like the first thing they say when you're like, does this contain naughty words like that one?
Yeah, but that's like the lowest on the scale of YouTube. Yeah,
still causes me extra steps. But that's why we love you. So yeah, man, we were talking about the humble download kerfuffle.
Yay!
And Baron Tenuin is like, hey, do you not remember? I'm sure I've told you about this before, but what are you doing? Acting like a Windows user and downloading zips via browser from humble for HB downloader will download all of your bundles. Save Steam keys, obviously, with checksum and hashing and make sure nothing is corrupt. There's some links to it. They'll be in the show notes. Between that and
LGOG downloader.
Okay, LGOG downloader. Link to that. It's made my life so much easier. I can just run a cron job, and downloads. I have to forget what I bought. We've all done it. Don't be shy. Uh-huh. I don't know, man. I'm a pretty shy person.
You know, I'll raise my hand, and I will admit I completely forgot that HB downloader was even an option. We talked about it, and I just...
Yeah, I haven't used it in a long time either, Pedro, so I kind of forgot about it myself. And I didn't know about the GOG one, so thank you, Vera Tenuta.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, I don't download enough multi-part stuff. That is what it boiled down to. That was the first time I'd ran into a situation where I was like, you need to download 28 of something. Like, yeah.
Now I have Firefox set up that if I hit that download all button and I switch to the torrents, it downloads them all automatically, and then Qubit Torrent picks up on all of them automatically and done.
The nice. And it was said because Mir made a mention yesterday in Discord that he's getting some because if you don't know, if you're on Linux, you may very well encounter the fact that 97% of the files are RAR files with a zip extension, which can cause issues, obviously. And Humble's like, LOL, that's how they're going to stay.
Mm-hmm. According to Mir, he posted on Discord earlier today or yesterday.
I think it was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, that Humble got back to him. It's like, no, sorry, we're not changing it. They're staying as they are.
Okay. Thanks, Humble. Bang up job on that one.
Why are we giving you money?
You know, because technically, if you jump through enough hoops, Pedro Matiz, you can describe them. Didn't you see the simple wall of text that was handily provided for
clearly
us
not.
On Saturday's show? And I'm like, yeah, it's easy as follow all that, deal with it. All right, beautiful people, we gotta get out of here. It's been fun, but we'll see you next week. But until then, we're gonna roll some credits and let's get some music going on.
Aw, thank you to Pink Ham Racing for hosting us on Twitch. That was sweet.
Pink Ham Racing, that sounds delightfully naughty, possibly delicious.
It is delicious. And ham, for the you want it pink.
Is ham pink?
Yes.
Okay. What about cooked ham?
Haplo Justin.
It depends
Michael
on how
Barbrand,
far you cook it.
Scott and Foxdog are there in the Atomic Ass and Mike G.
Do you like medium rare ham?
Darkwing and empty.
I like raw ham. Seriously, just give me a ham cut and I will eat it. I may have parasites afterwards, but I will eat it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've never tried that, Pedro. That scares me a little bit.
No. I just checked off a bunch of boxes. Like, may have pairs? No, okay. Oh, that clears that up. You have the brain worms, Pedro Mateus.
Probably. Maybe.
Oh.
Bye, beautiful people.
Bye, everyone.